This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
UR leader criticizes Western countries for their colonial pursuit despite claiming to be liberal democracy. Presidents of Iran and Kenya stress the need to expand bilateral ties as Ebrahim Raisi visits the African nation. And Ukraine's president calls for security guarantees from his Western allies as NATO leaders hold a second day of their summit. Everyone, thanks for tuning in to World News. Now, our top story, leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, has criticized Western countries for the colonial pursuit despite claiming to be liberal democracies. Ayatollah Khamenei called those democracies a big lie, said Western states are opposed to freedom-seeking and any democracy which is independent of global arrogance. He said that's a clear example of such a policy as Ukraine, where civilians are being killed because Western arms manufacturers seek benefits from a continuation of the war. Elsewhere in his remarks, Iran's leader said U.S. pursues evil acts as it confronts other nations in all fields. He said today the West is vulnerable more than ever. Ayatollah Khamenei also noted steadfastness of the Iranian nation and the Islamic establishments, what he called the Western Front, is in fact a cultural and global fight. Iran's President Ebrahim Raisi and his Kenyan counterpart William Ruto have stressed the need to further boost bilateral cooperation between the two countries.
We have historic cooperation with the African continent and Kenya and believe that relations between the governments and people of Iran and Kenya can expand further. Our goal is to expand cooperation by tenfold.
I expressed our gratitude and commitment to expand and deepen these relations. President Raisi and I had the opportunity to engage views and share ideas about emerging opportunities to improve the balance of trade.
Raisi and Ruto made the comments during a joint press conference in Nairobi. Two leaders also held talks and signed a number of cooperation documents in various fields. The Iranian president is in Kenya on the first leg of his three-nation Africa tour. Before his departure, Raisi underlined his trip is aimed at expanding economic and political ties with African nations. As the first visit to the continent by an American or Iranian president in over a decade, Raisi's three-day trip to Africa will also take him to Uganda and Zimbabwe. Now, Iran's foreign ministry has summoned the Russian ambassador to lodge official complaint to a joint Russia-GCC statement over Iran's three islands in the Persian Gulf. Ministry informed Alexei Didov about Iran's objection to the statement and called on Russia to rectify its stance. The Russian ambassador, for his part, stressed respect for the territorial integrity of the Islamic Republic. He also promised to convey a message to Moscow at the earliest. The sixth joint ministerial meeting of the strategic dialogue between the grouping of Persian Gulf Arab states, known as the GCC, and Russian Federation was held in Moscow on Monday. The ministers in a statement raised the issue of reaching a peaceful solution to the issue of Iran's trio islands. Tehran harshly reacted to it, saying islands belong to the Islamic Republic and such statements run counter to friendly relations between Iran and its neighbors. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky has called for security guarantees for his country upon arrival in Lithuania to attend the NATO summit.
On our agenda we have, I think for today, three priority questions. The first one is weapon packages, new weapon packages for supporting our army on the battlefield. And that is one. The second, I think, the invitation to NATO. We want to be on the same page with everybody, with all the understanding. And for today, what we hear and understand that we'll have this invitation when security measures will allow. Yes, so I want to discuss with our partners all these things, and the sword will speak today and fight for this. It's security guarantees for Ukraine on the way to NATO. Thank you so much.
NATO leaders are meeting in Lithuania's capital, Vilnius, for a second day. Ukraine's accession to the alliance is top on the agenda. Now, on Tuesday, U.S. said there is no timetable to offer Ukraine accession. It said, however, NATO will lay out a path of reforms for Ukraine before it can join the military alliance. That has drawn criticism from Zelensky, who called it absurd. Ukraine launches its NATO bid soon after the country enters into war with Russia in February of last year. Now, Western states have been reluctant to accept Ukraine as a new member, but instead they've sent numerous military aid to the country. Russia has just warned that increased military assistance to Ukraine could bring World War III that much closer. South Korea says the North has fired a ballistic missile off its east coast toward Japan in a move that could trigger a new round of confrontation with Washington and its allies. The South Korean military says the missile flew about 1,000 kilometers before crashing into the water. It marks North Korea's 12th launch this year. Just 2 days ago, North Korea threatened shocking consequences to protest what it called provocative U.S. reconnaissance activity near its territory. Meanwhile, Japan condemned North's missile launch, saying it threatens peace and stability of the region and beyond. Tensions remain high on the Korean Peninsula over the North's missile launches and recent deployment of a U.S. nuclear submarine. The North says Washington's deployment of its nuclear assets and its war games with South Korea pose a grave threat to peace. In Afghanistan, the Crimean-Congo hemorrhagic fever outbreak is claiming more lives and infecting a growing number of people. It's put the country's health system under immense pressure to provide adequate treatment for those sick. Correspondent in Kabul has your details.
The number of patients suffering from Crimean-Congo hemorrhagic fever, CCHF, in Afghanistan is rapidly increasing. This deadly viral disease causes fever, severe bleeding, and pain, and if left untreated, can lead to death. Currently, 30 patients are hospitalized in Kabul alone, a significant increase from the previous record of 5 patients, according to the authorities. Mashuk, who is a butcher, deeply regrets not taking security measures seriously and is now being under treatment for the deadly disease. He could have lost his life over being so easygoing.
I butchered 3 cows, one of which didn't look healthy to me either. After 2 days, I developed a fever and felt sick. I didn't care at first, but after my condition got worse, I came here and got diagnosed with CCHF. Now, after 3 days of treatment, I feel better.
The disease is treatable by a very special antivirus named ribavirin, provided to Afghanistan's Infectious Diseases Hospital by WHO. However, blood platelets are another important factor for treatment. It is becoming an issue due to the large number of patients needing blood platelets. In some cases, up to 10 units of blood platelets are required per patient, putting immense pressure on the National Blood Bank. Crimean-Congo hemorrhagic fever is considered a nationwide threat in Afghanistan. It can predominantly spread to humans through ticks and infected animals. Treatment for CCHF is primarily supportive and should include careful attention to fluid balance, correction of electrolyte abnormalities, oxygenation and hemodynamic support, as well as appropriate treatment of secondary infections. To prevent infection with CCHF, experts advise taking precautions such as avoiding tick bites, using repellents, wearing protective clothing, and avoiding contact with infected fluids. No vaccine is available. Abdullah Mirzadeh, Infectious Diseases Hospital, Kabul.
French President Emmanuel Macron says Paris has agreed to supply Ukraine with long-range missiles. That's following Britain's announcement that it will provide Ukraine with similar missiles as well. And we discussed this issue with our guests earlier in our news review program. Let's have a listen. Now welcome everyone to the News Review program, where we get in-depth in one of the day's top stories. France joins Britain in supplying Ukraine with long-range cruise missiles called Scalp, a move that allows Ukrainian forces to hit Russian troops deep behind the front lines. French President Emmanuel Macron made the announcement at a summit of the NATO alliance in Lithuania. French sources said countries already made a delivery of the missiles. Now, Britain said in May it was supplying its own version of the missile. The French version has a range of about 250 kilometers, three times longer than Ukraine's existing missile capacities. French authorities have suggested Ukraine has given them guarantees it won't fire the missiles into Russian territory. This as Washington has vowed to supply internationally banned cluster munitions to Ukraine. The U.S. is facing a chorus of criticism over its decision, including from China. Mao said dialogue's only viable way out of the Ukraine crisis. She urged parties involved to the conflict to avoid fanning the flames of the war. Separately, North Korea's foreign minister slammed the U.S., calling its decision a dangerous criminal act. Even Washington's Western allies, including the U.K., Canada, and Spain, have refused to provide the munitions. Cluster bombs were banned by a U.N. convention backed by more than 120 countries. Controversial weapons are considered a major threat to civilians as they release larger numbers of smaller bomblets that can kill indiscriminately over a wide area. Joining us now for the program is Jerome Hughes, joining us from Brussels, and Tony Gosling, historian and investigative journalist, joining us from Bristol. Gentlemen, I'd like to say welcome to both of you and hope you're both doing well. I guess, Jerome, we'll start with you to get the latest. Vladimir Zelensky was pretty irate earlier. He was expecting something in terms of accession. He's getting this consolation prize of a couple missiles with longer capacity. What can you tell us about the way things have unfolded for Ukraine over the past 24 hours, Jerome?
Well, Daniel, I think even before Biden traveled to Europe for the NATO summit, he made it clear that Ukraine is not ready to join NATO. I mean, everybody knows that basically that would end up in potentially a world war simply because Russia would not tolerate that. That would be the final straw for Russia. I mean, we've already seen the expansion of NATO. In April, Finland joined NATO. Sweden is going to become the 32nd member of the military alliance. And it just has been expanding over the past 30 years, which is why Russia says that it needed to secure its, you know, geographical territorial integrity because of the expansion eastward of NATO. But Zelensky is getting everything else apart from that. I mean, you talk about these long-range missiles, but also the cluster munitions, which are banned in more than 120 countries. And also, you know, we have troops, Ukrainian troops are being trained all the time now on warplanes that are going to be supplied by the West. So when you add it all up together, there is growing disquiet here in the European Union. We're getting statements in now all the time from anti-war groups and also political groupings in the European Parliament. And they're expressing concern that Western leaders are really pushing us to a situation where we could have a nuclear war. Because the big question is, you know, at what point does the Kremlin say enough is enough? Because this is relentless. And I was speaking to one security expert in the past couple of days who said, look, the biggest problem here is complacency. Because what happened is at the start, 500 days ago or whatever, February last year, when things escalated, at the beginning, Western leaders were terrified that things could spiral out of control altogether because, of course, Russia is such a major nuclear power. But as the days go on, as the weeks go on, as the months go on, and they keep getting away with more in terms of, you know, what many would see, or certainly what Russia would see as the provocation and this relentless supply of weapons to Ukraine, and as they keep getting away with more and more of that, they become complacent. But as this security expert said to me, that could change overnight. We could wake up one morning and hear news that, you know, things have escalated further because Russia has basically moved towards a situation where it's going to progress to potentially nuclear defense. And that can happen very quickly. So this is the big concern. And I think it's a growing concern, certainly amongst EU citizens here. I'm not sure about the United States, but certainly here, citizens in the EU, and when we hear from the civil society organizations with the statements and the anti-war groups, it's a growing concern.
Thank you there, Jerome. And Tony, welcome to the program there. Thanks for your patience. Now Tony, ironically, we're getting assurances both to the U.S. that the so-called cluster bombs are going to be used responsibly. Supposedly, the Ukrainians give assurances that they're going to do their best to, there won't be a risk to the civilian population. I don't know if you can give that assurance, actually. And now we're getting guarantees that they're not going to use these missiles into Russian territory. But with an upset Vladimir Zelensky and a frustrated and losing Ukrainian military, what are the likelihoods that things will somehow get out of hand and escalate when you continue to give more sophisticated weaponry to basically push the Russians into maybe a decision that might pull the entire world into this thing if they're already not there?
Well, I mean, isn't it interesting about Zelensky? He makes these promises, but then, of course, he promised when he was elected president of Ukraine that he would stop the fighting in the southeast of his country and halt the assault by the Ukrainian army on the Donbass, the breakaway regions, which massively voted, the Russian-speaking regions, to secede from Kiev. Now, so why should we trust him when he says that we won't use these Storm Shadow and the Scalp French missiles to hit Russia? And why should we trust him when he says that we will be responsible when we use these cluster bombs? So the answer, of course, is we can't trust him. And it's interesting watching him sort of stamping his feet with NATO, saying we want more weapons, we must join NATO. Well, there's a major problem there in that the NATO Charter is explicit that you cannot join NATO if you've got a border dispute or a war going on. And the question of the Ukrainian border, of course, is very much up in the air. There's a massive border, one, the biggest border dispute on the planet going on there. And so that would mean that if Ukraine was to enter NATO, NATO would be at war with Russia.
Good stuff, gentlemen. Stay safe to both of you. I want to thank you both for joining us on the program today here. That brings us to, let me name off our guest there. That was Jerome Hughes there joining us out of Brussels, and Mr. Tony Gosling, historian and investigative journalist, joining us from Bristol. And this brings us to the conclusion of this segment to your news review program, everyone. Thank you for tuning in, and goodbye for now.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
Uh, This is the part of the speech delivered on December 17, 2008 by Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Republic of Iran, on the occasion of Eid al-Ghadir. The commander of the faithful, Imam Ali alayhi salam, is so highly regarded by all Muslims with regard to his knowledge, piety and courage. In fact, all Muslims share the same opinions in regard to Ali ibn Abi Talib alayhi salam. What we Muslims have to consider today is the fact that Shia Muslims have protected this belief like their own lives over many consecutive years. Shia Muslims preserved their beliefs despite all opposition. Everyone is more or less aware of the enmity that is shown towards Shia Muslims and the pressure that has been exerted on them. Despite all these acts, Shia Muslims promoted the teachings of Shia Islam. Shia jurisprudence, or fiqh, kalam, philosophy, and civilization, as well as different sciences of Shia Islam, stand out in the history of Islam. And so do the ideas of Shia Muslims and the prominent figures of Shia Islam. Therefore, Shia Muslims have preserved their beliefs and will continue to do so in the future as well. However, you should note that such beliefs should not turn into a source of discord. This is a point which I have mentioned several times over the years and which I still emphasize.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
We are aware of the enemy's intentions and the evil goals which they try to achieve through fomenting discord in the Muslims' world. They try to achieve their goals under different pretexts, such as the conflict between Shia and Sunni Muslims. By enemy, I mean the enemies of Islam and the Holy Quran. I mean those who are opposed to monotheism and the commonly held beliefs of Muslims. I do not mean those who are opposed to certain aspects of Islam. The enemies try to foment discord in the Muslims' world. They know that the unity of Muslims is harmful to them. The enemies were witness to the fact that the Islamic Revolution attracted many hearts in the Muslim world after its victory. This was all due to the grandeur of the Islamic Revolution. Even those who were not Shia Muslims were attracted to the Islamic revolutions.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong.
Wildfires in Greece, Turkey, the United States.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes.
Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader.
On the news line.
Thank you. crossing a new threshold in the type of weaponry supplied to Kiev, the United States on Friday announced it will provide the internationally banned cluster munitions to Ukraine.
In this environment, Ukraine has been requesting cluster munitions in order to defend its own sovereign territory. The cluster munitions that we would provide have dud rates far below what Russia is doing, is providing, not higher than 2.5%.
Sullivan said Ukraine would not be using the munitions in a foreign land. He added that Kiev has provided assurances in writing that the weapons will be used carefully to minimize risks to civilian lives. U.S. President Joe Biden defended the decision, saying it was because the efforts to defend against Russia had run out of ammunition. The move drew an instant reaction from the United Nations.
The Secretary General supports the Convention on Cluster Munitions, which, as you know, was adopted 15 years ago. And he wants countries to abide by the terms of that convention. And so, as a result, of course, he does not want there to be continued use of cluster munitions on the battlefield.
A number of key U.S. allies defied Washington's decision to supply cluster munitions to Kiev.
Well, the UK is signatory to a convention which prohibits the production or use of cluster munitions and discourages their use. We will continue to do our part to support Ukraine against Russia's illegal and unprovoked invasion.
Sunak made the comments in an address to reporters. Spain also followed suit, saying that certain weapons and bombs cannot be delivered under any circumstances. France reiterated its opposition to the use of the controversial weapon. Germany said the decision goes against the Convention of Cluster Munitions that bans such weapons on the battlefield. Neither the United States nor Ukraine is party to the pact. Russia strongly condemned the move. In a statement, Russian Foreign Ministry spokeswoman Maria Zakharova said it is an act of desperation and shows weakness against the backdrop of the failure of the much-touted Ukrainian counteroffensive. Zakharova added the decision showed the aggressive anti-Russian course taken by the U.S., which is aimed at prolonging the conflict in Ukraine as much as possible. Tehran also lambasted the move. Foreign Ministry spokesman Nasser Kanani said the U.S. decision to send cluster bombs to Ukraine shows Washington's determination to perpetuate and further complicate the war in Ukraine. Inside the U.S., congressional Democrats raised concerns over the move. Senators Barbara Lee and Tim Kaine said Washington's decision to set cluster bombs to Ukraine could inspire other countries to sidestep an international convention barring such munitions. Supplying Kiev with cluster munitions comes as the armaments are highly controversial weapons that typically release large number of smaller bomblets, which can kill indiscriminately over a wide area. Those that go undetonated potentially endanger civilians for years to come. Cluster munitions are banned by over 100 countries. The supply of such weapons bring Washington's total aid to Ukraine to more than $40 billion since the Ukraine war began in February 2022. In total, the United States and its allies have provided Ukraine with numerous military aid packages worth hundreds of billions of dollars. The military support for Ukraine includes the delivery of heavy and light military weapons and ammunition, as well as non-lethal material military aid. Those weapons are sent to Kiev regardless of the fact that Russia has time and again warned that such a trend would only prolong the conflict and cause more destruction on both sides. But Ukraine allies seem to be more concerned about Kiev's failure on the battlefield and have consequently kept pumping Kiev full of advanced weapons. Those weapons not only have failed to prevent the conflict from getting exacerbated, but instead they have led to even more escalation on both sides. With Ukraine's so-called counteroffensive now it's in second months, Kiev has announced gains during its attacks on Russian forces. Ukraine says a number of villages have been liberated thanks to its counteroffensive. Russia, in the meantime, has targeted positions belonging to Ukraine using missiles, causing death and destruction in several areas. All in all, by supplying Ukraine with the internationally banned cluster munitions, the United States is taking two huge risks. One is simply prolonging the war, as Russia has numerously reiterated. And two is possibly getting Washington involved in the conflict. And that's what many throughout the globe prefer not to pick, given its potential global catastrophic consequences.
the U.S. Treasury Secretary has wrapped up a four-day visit to China with the aim of opening the line of communication and bringing long-running tensions between Washington and Beijing to an end.
A number of issues, including climate and U.S. restrictions on Chinese chip industry, were among topics discussed during the first 2 days of Janet Yellen's visit, but economy and trade co-centered the issues discussed. The U.S. official during the visit said she went to China to deepen communication and work toward a stable and constructive relationship between the two countries.
Amid a complicated global economic outlook, there is a pressing need for the two largest economies to closely communicate and exchange views on our responses to various challenges.
Yellen said, "We believe that it is in the best interest of both countries to make sure that we have direct and clear lines of communication at senior levels." Yellen also took aim at China's planned economy, urging Beijing to turn to more market-oriented practices. She suggested that a shift toward market reforms would be in China's interests. The U.S. Treasury Secretary also held a meeting with Chinese Vice Premier He Lifeng. During the meeting, Yellen said Washington and Beijing must communicate directly when they have concerns about each other's specific economic practices. Yellen noted that the United States and China, the world's two biggest economies, must compete fairly and communicate closely to avoid misunderstandings. Yellen stressed that Washington is not seeking a winner-take-all approach or economic advantage in its relations with Beijing, but wanted to ensure a healthy competition with what she called a fair set of rules that would benefit both countries over time. Yellen's trip is part of a flurry of visits U.S. authorities claim will ease tensions between Washington and Beijing. Last month, U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken visited China and held high-level discussions with Chinese officials, including President Xi Jinping. The two officials agreed that the mutual rivalry should not turn into conflict. The visit came ahead of a possible meeting between U.S. President Joe Biden and President Xi as soon as September's G20 summit in New Delhi. Janet Yellen's visit to China comes as Washington and Beijing are already at odds over a string of issues. Apart from economy and trade, one core still unresolved problem between the two powers is the issue of Taiwan. Tensions over Taiwan have been escalating ever since the United States enhanced its military buildup in the South China Sea in an effort to contain Beijing. After all, China has territorial claims over the self-ruled island and has warned against any move that jeopardizes its sovereignty and territorial integrity. But regardless of those elements, Washington has continued with its collision course with Beijing over the issue of Taiwan. Testimony to that was a trade deal the U.S. struck with Taiwan to deepen economic relations between both sides, a move that sparked a stern warning from Beijing. China strongly lashed out at the U.S., calling on Washington to stop official exchanges with Taiwan under the guise of trade. Other than the trade deal with Taiwan, Washington also held joint massive drills with other countries, including Canada, in the South China Sea, despite repeated warnings from Beijing against any such moves. Not to mention that U.S. vessels have repeatedly sailed through the Taiwan Strait, drawing outrage from China. The recent tensions have prompted Chinese officials to question the U.S. presence in the Asia-Pacific region. Chinese Defense Ministry has called on Washington to pull its military presence away from areas near China. Indeed, the question that arises is that how would the United States react if Chinese destroyers sail through areas close to U.S. borders in the North Atlantic or the North Pacific Oceans, or anywhere near the Gulf of Mexico? Given all such differences, what comes to the spotlight is the aim of Yellen's visit to Beijing and her meeting with Chinese officials. Many believe that the trip will bring no tangible results since the two biggest powers have so far not been able to resolve their most fundamental problems, including the Taiwan issue. What further complicates the situation is the respect the United States does not have for international law when it comes to its own interests. Taking that into consideration, any such trip aimed at easing tensions will be senseless.
The U.S. has made a decision that it will send Ukraine the deadly cluster munitions. The U.S. went on a media blitz to make its case that its decision was justified. from the White House to the Pentagon.
I'm as concerned about the humanitarian circumstance as anybody. But the worst thing for civilians in Ukraine is for Russia to win the war.
To Jake Sullivan, President Joe Biden's national security advisor.
And I'm not going to stand up here and say it is easy. It's a difficult decision. It's a decision we deferred. It's a decision that required a real hard look at the potential harm to civilians.
But are there any doubts about why cluster munitions should not be used and why they are deadly? Cluster bombs carry several hundred bomblets or cluster munitions. Dropped by aircraft or launched from the ground, they're designed to be dispersed over a wide area, which can cover the size of several soccer fields. As they are free-falling, they can strike the ground at a considerable distance from the target area if they are not used correctly. And what makes cluster munitions so controversial is their impact on civilian populations.
The problem with cluster munitions is dud rate. Because these munitions drop large numbers of what are bomblets, depending on how they land, some of them don't go off and will hang around. And that number is anywhere from 2% on up, depending on the terrain. And civilians can happen upon these duds, and they can cause civilian casualties.
According to the International Committee of the Red Cross, up to 40% of cluster bombs result in unexploded rounds or duds, which can cause civilian deaths long after a conflict is over. The Convention on Cluster Munitions is a convention banning the use of cluster bombs and has been joined by more than 120 countries. The U.S., however, is not a signatory to this convention, even though it is a member of the Organization on the Prohibition of Chemical Weapons, OPCW. Decades after the conflict, they continue to kill. According to the group Handicap International, 98% of cluster bomb victims are civilians, and 27% are children. When the U.S. president was asked why he was providing the cluster munitions now, part of an $800 million security package, he said it was because Ukraine had run out of ammunition.
Mr. President, cluster munitions, why now?
Run out of ammunition.
The Secretary General supports the Convention on Cluster Munitions, which, as you know, was adopted 15 years ago. And he wants countries to abide by the terms of that convention. And so as a result, of course, he does not want there to be continued use of cluster munitions on the battlefield.
The U.S.-backed Saudi war on Yemen, officially still not over. It has resulted in the death of hundreds of thousands. Some of those killed, which were mainly women and children, were a result of cluster munitions, courtesy of the U.S.
Children are the main victim of cluster bombs because the remains of the bombs come into forms of foreign and metallic luster objects and looks like toys. Victims usually lose their eyes and suffer from deformities in their bodies.
Yet, the U.S. use of cluster munitions have not been restricted to Yemen. The U.S. initially used cluster bombs during the invasion of Afghanistan that began in 2001. The U.S. dropped more than 1,500 cluster bombs in that country during the first 3 years of the occupation. It is very telling that not only did the U.S. not have any regard for using these outlawed bombs, but the amount used showed complete disregard for human lives, particularly for women and children, who are still being murdered to this day. And it doesn't end there. The Biden administration has also agreed to provide Ukraine with depleted uranium shells to equip Abrams tanks that the U.S. is sending there. Britain has already delivered these tanks to Ukraine, equipped with depleted uranium shells. DU munitions developed in the 1970s are not nuclear weapons and do not produce a nuclear explosion, but soldiers or civilians can be exposed to the uranium either in combat or afterward. This was particularly the case in Iraq, when during the U.S. 2003 invasion, heavy use of depleted uranium caused many to die and suffer to this day of diseases which have led to things like birth defects. Instead of searching for a political solution, U.S. and U.K. governments clearly believe that providing DU munitions will improve Ukraine's ability to defeat Russian tanks and bring this conflict to an end. What is even more telling is that the U.S. has said that Ukraine has run out of ammo, in particular the 155mm howitzer, putting into question Ukraine's ability to continue this war. The 155mm howitzer round is one of the most requested artillery munitions of the Ukraine war. The U.S. has already shipped more than 1.5 million rounds to Ukraine, but Kiev is still seeking more. Even though both Russia and Ukraine have been accused of using cluster munitions, which have killed civilians on both sides, the Russian ambassador to the U.S., Anatoly Antonov, criticized the transfer of these weapons to Ukraine by the U.S. The cruelty and cynicism with which Washington has approached the issue of transferring lethal weapons to Kiev is striking. Now, by the fault of the U.S., there will be a risk for many years that innocent civilians will be blown up by submunitions that have failed. Do these civilians deserve this fate due to the U.S. desire to weaken Russia, the purported aim of the U.S. supporting Ukraine in this war? It has been described as an unprecedented restriction on people in France. Lawmakers have agreed that the country's police forces need to be allowed to spy on suspects by remotely activating the camera, microphone, and GPS of their phones and other devices. The measure agreed by lawmakers covers laptops, cars, and other connected objects, as well as phones. It further allows devices to be remotely activated to record sound and images of people allegedly suspected of terror offenses, as well as delinquency and organized crime. Rights activists have slammed the measure as, quote, an authoritarian snooper's charter. A digital rights group has slammed the provision, saying it raises serious concerns over infringements of fundamental liberties. La Quadrature du Net has called for the proposal as part of a, quote, slide into heavy-handed security. In early June, the French Senate, the upper house, approved a controversial provision to a justice bill that allowed law enforcement to eavesdrop on suspected terrorists and criminals using their devices.
The message from the top has generally been one to support the police and to reinforce their powers. And it has to be borne in mind that the police have faced some significant challenges, especially in the previous decade, where France was subjected to a series of terrorist attacks. And there was a fear that the police didn't have strong enough powers to contain that. And so some of those powers were reinforced.
Moreover, senators approved the provision in the bill allowing law enforcement to track devices' location if the owner is suspected of committing a crime. The measures come amid unprecedented protests across France over the killing of a 17-year-old boy of Algerian origin by police in late June. Nahal's killing renewed old grievances regarding police brutality and racial profiling. It is estimated that some 3,400 to 4,000 people were arrested, which included more than 1,200 minors. Most of those arrested in the recent unrest had no previous criminal record. Meanwhile, there are concerns about restrictions on social media in France. France's digital minister, Jean-Noël Barrot, has announced that from August 25th, Paris will introduce mandatory measures censoring the work of social networks in the country. According to the French minister, President Macron had urged him to, quote, put maximum pressure on social networks. Barrot has also proposed to the Senate the creation of a working group to address measures to be taken in the event of mass protests and riots. Earlier, Macron claimed that protesters were using Snapchat, TikTok, and Telegram to film violent events and to organize illegal gatherings.
Social media platforms play a significant role in the events of the past few days. We have on several of them, Snapchat, TikTok, and several others, both the organization of violent gatherings and a form of mimicking of violence, which among the youngest leads to a feeling of unreality. It sometimes feels like some of them are experiencing in the streets the video games that have intoxicated them. And this, the law, including over the past few months, has set out changes to parent control that we want to be fully respected.
Macron has also discussed the possibility of banning access to certain social media features. Macron has told about 300 local leaders that the country needs to reflect on social media use among the youngest and on the prohibitions that must be put in place. Comments drew the ire of many critics.
These incidents just keep on happening, but this time it was captured on video, and that's why people are fuming. But Macron goes to his Elton John concert, and then he blames video games for the protests. Video games. Maybe his police officers play too many video games, and that's why they pulled out their guns on a 17-year-old without a driver's license, and one of them said, I'm gonna put a bullet in your head. Macron now wants to ban sensitive content on social media because it's embarrassing for him. But dare Iran ban Twitter or Egypt cut off the internet, then Macron and the West will spring into their usual chorus of that's censorship and that's a dictatorship, no freedom of speech.
French government has been accused of conducting attacks on migrants, racial profiling, and religious intolerance. Police killing has tapped into the long, festering resentment of police brutality among many French minorities and have rekindled a long, painful debate about racial profiling by police.
This is IRIB English Radio.
IRIB English Radio. With you every single moment.
Imam Ali alayhi salatu wasalam, the reason we love him as our hero, or not only in the material sense, in the spiritual sense, in the leadership sense.
لا يقيم أمر الله سبحانه إلا من لا يصانع. ولا يضارع ولا يتبع المطامع.
I would like to take this opportunity to talk about one dimension of the personality of Amir al-Mu'mineen.
السلام عليك يا أمين الله في أرض.
Peace be upon you, O trusted guardian, appointed by Allah.
The universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam in To My Brother.
Imam Ali alayhi salam, the most distinguished and extraordinary personality in Islam after the Holy Prophet Muhammad. His entire life is a struggle for the advancement of Islam, the universal religion prescribed by Allah for all of humanity. Imam Ali alayhi salam was the living miracle raised up by the Holy Prophet Muhammad himself, and was not only the successor and the executor of the Holy Prophet Muhammad, but as history testifies, he was also a great human being. A brave defender of Islam, a just and fair judge, a generous philanthropist, a champion of the people, and the most pious person of his time. And in today's world, overcome by evil and darkness, and oppression and slavery, and tyranny and falsehood, a quick look into this beacon of truth and justice, a look into the universal persona of Imam Ali, is greatly useful for making and changing our lives, our families, our societies, and our world into the beautiful world that Allah has planned for humanity.
قال أمير المؤمنين علي عليه السلام يوم المظلوم على الظالم أشد من يوم الظالم على المظلوم.
Amir al-Mu'mineen, Ali alayhi salam, said,
The day of the oppressed over the oppressor will be severer than the day of the oppressor over the oppressed.
Welcome back, dear friends. It's great to have you with us. This is IRIB English Radio, the program's To My Brother, and we are discussing the universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam. Dear friends, we find in our lives that we might have committed sins, an unfortunate reality. Of course, because of the modern day and age in which we live in, sometimes it is, I don't want to say unavoidable, but sometimes it is very easy to commit sin because of the environment in which we live in. Everybody seems to have a handheld smart device. Everybody has access to the internet. Everybody, you know, in the Western world, it's even worse because there's access to things such as alcohol and drugs and promiscuity and ethical and moral corruption as well. But because of all these kind of negative and evil factors and variables, we end up running into committing sins. Now, one of the things that we learn from the universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam is regarding forgiveness, but more so than forgiveness is this idea of remorse. And it's really beautiful because the before asking for forgiveness and doing istighfar, this stage or this phase of remorse is very important. This feeling of being ashamed, this feeling of being remorseful, regretful, embarrassed for having committed a certain sin. And so in the teachings of Imam Ali alayhi salam and in his universal persona, we find that this is something that is very integral, and it is a pillar of istighfar and asking for forgiveness, to the point where we find Imam Ali alayhi salam, he says in one place that remorse for a sin counts as seeking forgiveness. And so again, this aspect of Imam Ali alayhi salam, which is very beautiful, despite being infallible, despite being immaculate, we find this sense of asking the Almighty Allah for forgiveness. And the most beautiful place that we find this is in the Dua Kumail, this supplication of Kumail, which was taught to Kumail ibn Ziyad by Imam Ali alayhi salam. And how profound is the idea of remorse and asking for forgiveness from the Almighty Allah, despite the fact that, you know, he did not commit any sin, but still this beautiful aspect of remorse, this beautiful aspect of seeking forgiveness emanates from this pure and blessed being of Amir al-Mu'mineen, the Commander of the Faithful. And we too need to inculcate this in our daily lives. We need to reflect and contemplate and go over some of the sins, if not all of the sins, if that is possible to do, that we might have committed in our lives, and then to truly feel remorseful how we wasted an opportunity to be able to do good, how we wasted an opportunity to turn away from the disobedience of the Almighty Allah. Be remorseful, be ashamed, be embarrassed. But then, after that remorse, we have to ask for forgiveness. And here we find that the universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam is teaching us that, listen, when you are remorseful and you decide to not commit that sin again because you feel ashamed and you feel embarrassed, the Almighty Allah is so incredibly merciful that He will forgive you even just based upon that remorse. Now, that doesn't mean that we should stop at the remorse. Matter of fact, we should move forward and ask for forgiveness, and hopefully that forgiveness comes about with tears
and tears of regret and tears of remorse. And, you know, then it will be, as they say, nurun ala nur, light upon light, that not only will the Almighty Allah forgive us based upon our remorse, but the Almighty Allah will also forgive us based upon our forgiveness, inshallah. A very beautiful and moving lesson brought to us by the universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam.
Assalamu alaikum to you, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, the program To My Brother. This moment, I invite you to listen to the Arabic text of Ziyara Aminullah along with the English translation. Please stay tuned.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. أشهد أنك جاهدت في الله حق جهاده وعملت بكتابه واتبعت سنن نبيه.
I testify that you made utmost efforts, as it should be, in the cause of Allah, acted upon His book, followed the way of life of His Prophet, blessings of Allah be on him and his children, to the last moment of your life, until Allah invited you to come unto Him and used His discretion to take you away and sealed your enemy's doom with the blame that the arguments had been made known to one and all through you. O Allah, let me be happy and satisfied with that which Thou considers good for me. Let me agree with that which Thou decides for me. Let me passionately remember Thee and invoke Thee. Let me be in love with Thy pure and sincere friends. Let me be well-liked and respected on the earth and in the heavens. Let me be unruffled and well-composed in the midst of misfortunes. Let me be gratefully thankful in prosperity. Let me be mindful of much and more bounties. Let me ardently desire for the heart-warming meeting with Thee, well-equipped with piety to gain my end on the day of requital. Let me follow into the footsteps of Thy representatives. Let me disassociate myself from the mannerism of Thy enemies. Let me pass my time in this world by praising and glorifying Thee.
قد لسعت حية الهوى كبدي فلا تبي ولها ولا راغي
Now let's listen to Brother Muhammad Al-Hilli, who's going to talk about today's topic.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله تعالى وبركاته Do you want to be healthy and feel good? Perhaps you won't find anyone not sharing this goal. Whilst there's a plethora of advice online and by experts, we have wonderful recommendations in Islamic teachings, including the sayings of the Holy Ahlul Bayt alayhum as-salam. They all lived a healthy life and would love their followers to be healthy too. For instance, I have personally found hundreds of narrations on healthy lifestyle from the Commander of the Faithful, Amir al-Mu'mineen, Imam Ali alayhi salam. Here are tips in this regard. The art of eating. In advice to his son, Imam al-Hasan alayhi salam, Amir al-Mu'mineen, peace be upon him, states, Do not eat unless you're hungry. Leave eating.